Hello, world. Welcome to my show, Sight for Sound Life Coaching with a Twist. It's a beautiful, glorious day in L.A. on this Tuesday, June 17th. And I am excited about this show because I have a very, very, very special guest today. And a little bit about myself first. My name is Janet Kaleri. I'm your host and your life coach. And I welcome you and invite you and encourage you to call in today. So here are the numbers, and you can also see them on the BBS radio site. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. That's for the U.S. and Canada. And the local number is 530-876-3222. And if you choose to be a little shy, you can also come into the BBS Fast Chat. So at the top of my page, which is bbsradio.com/sightforsound, there's a BBS Fast Chat button there. If you wish to come into the show that way, that would be great. And my life coaching business is called Sight for Sound. Sight is when you see things as they truly are, or when I see things as they truly are, I make sound choices in life. So make some healthy, wise choices. The idea through coaching is that I assist you in getting to know yourself better. And the more we know ourselves, the better our lives work. So we have more information, we have more tools in our daily lives, in our personal life, in our business life, relationships, all that great thing. Even our hobbies and our in volunteering work. So life coaching to me is a results-based and forward-moving process. It's a fun, objective, confidential, non-judgmental relationship. A really safe place to open up, be vulnerable, express yourself, express your desires, where you feel stuck, where you feel strong. And as a coach, I assist you in moving forward in your life, in any area of your life, both personal and professional. And you can find out more about me on sightforsound.com. I truly enjoy what I do. It is extremely rewarding to know you, to get to know my clients, and form relationships that are of trust and respect. And lots of love and lots of fun. So today, speaking of coaching, I have a very special guest. His name is Hans Philipp. And Hans actually certified me as a coach last year. And he's been very instrumental in my life. More about me being in my beingness than my doingness. He is the founder of Ontico Being University and the co-founder of Accomplishment Coaching in San Diego. And he's also the founder of Ontico Seminars. And as Han says, there is nothing more satisfying, fun, or powerful than a human being living from essence, on purpose, in their life, in business. And it is possible to learn how to manage your survival mechanism so it takes less and less of your time, intellect, and energy. It is possible to live a balanced, productive life that leaves you satisfied and fulfilled now. Not tomorrow or a month from now or a year from now, but now. And Hans has been coaching individuals and businesses throughout the U.S. and in Europe for more than 18 years. He is an entrepreneur committed to people winning in their life. He is also a partner for 7 years in his wife Desiree's company called Self-Esteem for Teens. I am really happy, very grateful for Hans Phillips being in my life and pushing me in a way that brought me into another level of my potential as a woman and as a coach. And Hans is love in being. That's his motto, love in being. And I'm really excited to get into this beingness and these survival mechanisms. So I welcome you, Mr. Hans Phillips.
Thanks very much, Janet. It's great to be here.
Yay. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on the show today.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. My pleasure.
I've been getting your announcements about your show for quite some time, and I'm just really tickled to finally be on it.
Yay! Yeah, it's fun. It's definitely a fun way to connect with people. And so Hans and I encourage our listeners to call in. This is 50 more minutes to create some amazing value. If you have questions or any thoughts and ideas that you want to share, please call in 877-876-5227. And again, you can go on the BBS chat line as well. So, dear Han, tell us about Antipo Being University, the definition of ontology.
Well, ontology is the study of the being of human being and our relationship to reality. And I had been studying human beings for quite some time and not bumped into the being part. When I was a younger man, about 25-year-old man, I bumped into my wife, started dating her, and she was steeped in this field of ontology, which had been around for 200 years, but I'd never heard of it, mostly because it's in either philosophy or schools of religion mostly, which is too bad because I think that being spoken about in everyday life, in business and in relationships and in schools would make a big difference on our planet. And I resisted the conversation for a number of years with her and was right about my experience.
Don't you love being right?
Well, I find that as a man, it's my job. And when I got done resisting and actually got with her program, actually got in her conversation, I just discovered an infinite amount of possibility that I hadn't even begun to explore. And when I got that for myself, I got really excited about what was possible for everyone on the planet. And so I went and studied this field of ontology with a gentleman named Tex Johnston and got trained by him for 2 years and have been here ever since.
Wow. Well, go Desiree. Woohoo!
Yeah, Desiree's my reason for being. She laughingly says, I trained you to be with me and now you be with everybody.
That's a great wife. Great wife, for sure. Well, that's lovely. So, what does being the being existence have to do with the conception of reality? I had wrote this question down.
Well, it's funny because for me, we just take a look at any romantic relationship, and any argument that we have is based on I have a perception of reality and you have a perception of reality, and we don't agree. And if we bring in a third, a fourth, and a fifth person, we can probably get some more disagreement in there. And at the same time, there is, something out there. There's a fabric and molecules, and there are things coming together, so there's something. And if we can agree on what that something is, then we can move some things forward. And so, the idea that there is a reality, I think it more has to do with an agreement about reality. If you hit me in the head with a piece of wood, I'm going to agree with you that it's hard. But there's lots of other things that are not necessarily, we can disagree or agree to disagree. You know, if I jump in the water, I might think it's too cold, and you might think it's just right. And so this idea that, you know, we can shift our perception, it's pretty new, you know, because for so many centuries, we've used language to describe my reality, and whoever has the most control of the situation gets to have their reality be the reality. But what's really fun is to, when you start working with people on having them see that, you know what, there is nothing. It's all made up, and what do you want to make up?
Mm-hmm.
People can make up things about time and money and love and all kinds of different areas of their life, and life gets a whole lot more fun when we're making it up rather than, well, my grandma said this was how it is, so this is how it is.
Mm-hmm. So the beingness, that seems to include one's feelings or emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the whole human being. You know, I can't, as a guy, I can divorce myself from my emotions pretty easily. But, you know, but my challenge is to bring the whole me to my experience of life, the mental me, emotional me, spiritual me, and physical me, and have all of that be, you know, coming through. And I know lots of people who get stuck in, you know, they are their bodies, or they are their feelings, or they are their mind. I work with a lot of engineers who they just see their bodies as a transport device for their heads, you know, and that's okay, but I promise you, if you don't take care of your body, sooner or later it's going to rebel, and it's not going to transport your mind anymore. So the challenge is for us to really live kind of a holistic life where we're taking care of our heart, our body, our mind, and our spirit so that we can be present. And when we talk about being present, for me, there's different levels to it, but the feeling piece is really critical, because for many of us, if we can get in tune with our feelings really can inform us of some pretty core stuff. You know, if we can learn to trust our feelings, feelings can be very right on.
Yeah, especially like my body is sensitive, and it's always giving me some kind of message. And you know, back in the day, for years, it turned into depression and all kinds of ailments, and I thought I was a victim of it, and it was running me. Whereas, you know, the last 8 years, it's like, oh, okay, my body is sending me a message, so I'm going to look at it and feel the feelings and hopefully hear the message, you know. And this day, it's for me, in terms of the beingness, which it's perfect timing right now to have you on the show, because I have personally been practicing my beingness in the last month or so, and like for the last week I've had nausea, and you know, I don't have a flu, I don't have a virus, I don't have any of those diagnoses. It's something to do with my beingness and being present to something. Is that a description of what you are teaching?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we listen to our bodies, yeah, I tell my clients all the time who are sick and still at work, I say, you know what animals do in nature when they get sick? And I know, what do they do? Well, they lie down.
Yeah.
And when they feel better, they get up, and they don't get up until they feel better. So listening to our bodies, you know, I think for many of us, if we ate and then asked ourselves after each bite, am I still hungry, there'd be a lot of weight loss because we're eating for all kinds of different reasons, not necessarily because we're hungry for food. So yeah, our bodies are really great sort of tuning forks for how life is. You know, an illness or a colleague of mine used to call it, a dis-ease, can definitely be an indicator that something's up, something for us to pay attention to, something that's getting in the way of us being present or being with something or being in action.
Sure.
It's great.
The dis of ease. The ease is being dissed. Well, what are your thoughts on intuition playing a part in this beingness?
You know, my sense of intuition is that if I can listen to a message that I'm giving myself, and if I can listen to where it's coming from, you know, because my fear can tell me one thing. But when I'm really tuned into life and you and me and all around me, I can get these messages that actually make a difference. You know, I was walking away from my car the other day, and I had left my wallet in my car in the center console. It was covered and everything. but I just had this thought, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thought was, it doesn't matter. And I went back and I got my wallet, because my hunch is that if I get that message, hey, don't do that, and then I ignore it, it's likely to get stolen. Because how many, you know, if I had a dollar for every time I ignored something that, you know, that was an intuition, you know, I could retire. And so
I think I could retire 5 times over.
I started to listen to those messages first time through, just like it would be as though my mom said, don't forget to wash your hands. You just listen the first time. Because my mother, you know, she would get irritated the more times she would have to say it to us. And I find that it's worse for me as a human being, because I have a voice inside my head and I have a counter voice to that voice, and then I have a counter, you know, it's like it gets really complicated and noisy inside my head. And if I just simply will honor that intuition, who cares if I'm right or wrong? You know, it said go left, I went left. It's not going to
mm-hmm.
kill me.
Well, I think intuition is a great tool for being right anyway. It's because, you know, it's my gut instinct. I don't have any data. I don't have any facts, nothing. It was just my gut, so I get to be right. I've been joking about that with a friend of mine lately.
But we're back to our bodies. You know, if my body has a reaction and then it gives me a message based on that reaction or that response, you know, why wouldn't I listen to it? It's like putting my hand on a hot plate. If I get this intuition that, oh, that burns, I take my hand off that hot plate.
Yeah.
You know, we can start to do that with our emotions and our, you know, our relationship with each other in the universe. Like, hey, what do you think, or what do you feel, or what does your gut say?
And it's been interesting to really follow and listen to my body and my gut and just the random thoughts that come to my head. And I was in a situation a few months ago, and it didn't feel right, and I was just lying there quiet, and I realized I was having the same feeling, the same thoughts that I did in situations, you know, a few years ago that turned out to be, well, I'll call them nightmares back then, but they're always a blessing. But my point is that I just lied there and I listened and I felt my body, and it was the same exact thoughts running through my head and the same feeling. And I said, oh, okay, well, this is a really good sign that the situation I'm in is not, it's not healthy. So I got out of it.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah, so many times we're dealing with so much that's going on with us that we don't know what to listen to. Our body, our mind, our heart, you know, the voice inside of our head that's angry with us, the voice inside of our head that's pleading with us, we don't know what to listen to. And so, you know, for the last couple of years, Janet, I've really taken on balancing my life, practicing what I preach, if you will, having a really high level of well-being so that I'm not tired in listening, or I'm not angry in listening, that I have a fairly balanced place to listen from, and I find that I'm able to trust myself more if I'm well-rested and well-fed and I'm drinking my water and I'm keeping my stress down and I'm resting and playing and that I'm actually taking care of myself, then I find that I can trust myself and listen to myself a whole lot more effectively than if, you know, I'm tired and I'm, you know, hungry and I'm pissed off at my wife and what's that you say?
What was that? The good balance of body, mind, spirit, heart and spirit and emotions. What other techniques do you use for people in the sense that there is so much going on and it's so noisy that it's very hard to listen to ourselves? So what do you give as techniques to people to listen?
One of the easiest ones is to ask people to have a bedtime and a rise time. I don't know about you, Janet, but when I got out of my dad's house, one of my favorite things was I could go to bed whenever I wanted to. And I could pretty much get up whenever I wanted to. And I formed kind of a habit with that, that freedom meant that I was an adult. And I'm not the only one, because lots of the people that I work with, when I entertain this idea of getting to bed at a regular time and waking up at a regular time, boy, they don't like that structure.
Mm-hmm.
But the hours, early in the morning, 5 a.m., 6 a.m., there's nothing going on. And there's this peace and newness and freshness to the day that really allows us to take stock of who are we and what are we committed to and what do we want to actually do with our life and our day. And that, taking that time to take stock and, chart a course, I found really valuable. And
mm-hmm.
I jokingly tell my clients that, look, all the trouble in life happens after 9 o'clock at night anyway. whether you're at a bar or standing in front of your fridge, it's late at night. And, we're tired and now we've got this sense of entitlement and I'm going to do what I want and I put up with that over there, so I'm going to do, I'm going to take what I want over here.
Oh.
And I find that if I just go to bed, if I just treat my work life as though, I have a job, and I do, I can get up whatever I want, I can schedule my time however I want, but, lots of people with a 9-to-5 job, they really ought to be in bed to get a particular amount of sleep so that they can function at a high level if they're interested in that. They need, some amount of sleep. Now, it's different for everybody. For me, I know that if I get 8, I'm in good shape. If I get 7, I'm going to be a little tired. And less than 7, I'm going to be a lot tired.
Mm-hmm.
And given the choice, why wouldn't I get 8? So if I'm going to get up at 5, that means I've got to be in bed by 9. And people scoff at me when I tell them I go to bed at 9.
9 o'clock?
Are you kidding?
The Italians are just eating dinner.
And so Sunday through Thursday, I go to bed at 9 o'clock. I might stay up a little bit late or sleep in a little bit late, but after doing this for a couple of years, I don't sleep much past 6 a.m., even on the weekends, and I used to hide out in sleep. I used to really just luxuriate in sleep. It's a great place to hide out.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that I'm much more clear with enough sleep in my system, and so that, to me, is one of the fundamentals of being able to listen, is how have I treated myself, and have I taken care of myself?
Well, I just finished writing a book on that. It's I'm as good to others to the degree I am with me. So if I'm not getting enough sleep or water or exercise or creativity or playtime, et cetera, then there's not a lot left over within me to give, in the workplace or to my family or friends.
Right. When's your book coming out?
I don't know yet.
I just
finished it last night.
Oh, very good. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Really good. Well, I look forward to it being on your website so people can buy it.
Me too.
The other thing, Janet.
Great.
The other thing, you were talking about techniques for listening. Very famous people, Albert Einstein, JFK, Martin Luther King, would take a half hour out of the middle of their day and just stop what they were doing and spend time contemplating or taking a nap, but they would do nothing. They would just sit. And whatever happened when they were sitting for that 20 minutes or half an hour is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I can figure if those great people took time out of their very busy day, that probably there's some value in it for me. The doing nothing part is really challenging, especially in our day and age, because I don't know about you, but by the end of the day, there's plenty of things that I haven't gotten done. And taking another half hour out of that schedule seems like a crazy thing to do. But it really works,
and I've been doing that a lot in the last month. Like just in the middle of the day, I will literally stop and be quiet. I'll lie down, I'll meditate, something, but I will literally stop.
And there are people who don't want to do that or can't do that, and that's fine. But again and again, what I find is that there's not a whole lot that's new with regards to human beings. A lot of research has been done. A lot of people have spent their whole life learning to master it. And, just they're simple stuff. It's not super exciting. It's not the newest flavor. If Albert Einstein was stopping in the middle of his day, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But that's still effective, and it still works, and it's simple. And you don't have to go take a class or buy a piece of equipment. You just sit in a chair. But
mm-hmm.
getting people to sit in that chair, the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to hear all the noise, and then they're likely to hear what's behind the noise, and then they're likely to hear what's behind that, and there's just this whole journey into our inner psyche that lots of people don't want to go on, and you know, as long as there's Starbucks and email, they don't have to worry about going on that journey.
So what do you say to those people? This is a question I wrote, so it's what do you say to the people or your clients? The way I wrote my question is those who resist the self-acknowledgement. Like, in other words, those who resist being quiet and doing nothing because they fear going into their inner psyche.
We want to have it be a low gradient. It's too easy to, you know, throw them into a cold plunge and say, see, you're not dying. But they're probably not going to come back next week or keep it up. And so the challenge is to lower the gradient and take small, what my coach calls, sweet steps.
Mm-hmm.
Just little things that don't necessarily bring up a bunch of reaction, but that actually do move us toward the direction we want to go in.
Mm-hmm.
A gentleman called me for coaching today, and he wanted to talk about who he wasn't and what hadn't happened and what wasn't going to happen and all of the ways that he wasn't being. And after about 2 minutes, I stopped him and I said, you know, we're in fantasy land, and we're not even in good fantasy land. We're in negative fantasy land. And if you want to talk about that, that's great, but you don't need to call me to talk about that, and I actually don't want to talk about that. And his self-assessment was just so negative. And when he got around to, okay, well, what's valuable about him, he went right to what he had done and what he had, as opposed to who he was. And he was looking for a woman to be involved with him and see all of his value. I said, look, that's not going to happen until you see your value separate from what you've done and what you have, and really start to value the core of yourself, the essence of who you are, your core beliefs, your core values, you know, what you truly believe, what's real for you, and start acknowledging those things. And they're separate from a degree or a million-dollar home or, you know, the fact that you ride your bike everywhere and are making a really low carbon footprint on the planet, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
But it's not, it doesn't to speak directly to who you are. So, you know, that's his challenge, is to actually acknowledge himself separate from all that stuff and really fall in love with himself, because there's no way someone's going to fall in love with him in spite of himself. He's not going to let somebody love him more than he loves himself.
I think that's pretty common these days.
Yes. And so that's the challenge for people, is to look inside. And if you can't find anything, which is our fear, you're going to look inside, there's going to be nothing there, then, you know, do some reading or, you know, find a group that has, you know, like-minded ideals. But get in conversation with yourself. Get in a dialogue with yourself so that you can start to grow that relationship. Because I'm married 18 years now, and I want my wife to take care of me, and I want my wife to solve my problems, and I want my wife to see what I'm doing without me pointing to it, and blah, 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 blah. But it's not great. It's not healthy, and it's probably not going to happen, because I unfortunately married a smart woman. And one of the first things she ever said to me when I told her, you know, she asked me, what do you really want? And I said, I want to be adored. And she said, boy, that's not going to happen here. And I thought it was a reasonable request. I'm just looking for adoration. But what I really got to out of years of working on myself was adoration is something that mothers do with their sons or fathers do with their daughters. So, you know, that's what parents do with children. And I missed out on that as a child. I missed out on the adoration of my parents. So I was looking for some woman to make up for that. That's a bad deal. There's nothing sexy about it. There's nothing sexy about me wanting to be adored.
You've got to adore yourself first, right?
Yes, please. And you know, I'm 47 years old, and I've just started working with a psychiatrist. And, you know, I hadn't foreseen that it was going to happen, but I unearthed something that was pre-verbal. It was back when I was a year old, and I need to actually go sit with somebody who specializes in the emotional world and the psychological world and who knows about childhood development to put the pieces together for me. I need to heal that place in myself because I can see the places that it's getting in the way in my life. And I don't have to heal that. And I'm 47 years old and I haven't healed it. But for me, if I find a place that's unhealed because I'm intent on being my highest and best self as a leader and as a coach and as a father and as a husband,
Well, you adore yourself enough to do that.
True enough. So I'm after it, and I'm having conversations with a gentleman, and we'll heal that place and then see what unfolds. Because I know what the stuck me, the unhealed me, creates. And I just don't have any commitment to creating that, just like you with that situation where you're like, this is familiar, which means 2 and 2 is probably 4, and I'm probably going to get the same result. Let's get out of here now.
Yeah.
You know, same situation with me. I can see what's going to happen, and I'm not committed to that result or outcome. Let's go ahead and shift the dynamic.
And I bet that you revealed this one-year-old time within you in your process of being, in your process of taking time to be quiet.
Yeah, I found that, you know, sharing it with my wife, sharing it with my community, sharing it with my family, that the more transparent I am about it, the quicker I heal it. Now, the danger is I'm going to get showy about it, like, hey, look at me, look how transformed I am or how transparent I am. But if I'm just genuinely in the moment, and if it comes up and I want to share with someone, and I do, it has tremendous value for people because they actually take on, well, wow, you can do that. You can have this depth of a conversation with someone who you have a professional relationship with, and it's an invitation for them to consider the possibility themselves.
Well, that's inspiring. Not a man at a midlife crisis, but at that age, as they call it, and you're a man, and you're so willing to be transparent that I imagine that it spills over into specifically more men being willing to be quiet and take a look at, you know, anything that's keeping them stuck in their life.
Well, I'll tell you, it's an odd experience to be 47 and look for an answer and not be able to find it, or look for a feeling and not be able to feel it. So, you know, it's certainly understandable why people in general, but men specifically, wouldn't explore this stuff, because it's no fun feeling, you know, blank or numb or silly. After all I've done and all I've created, to not be able to come up with a feeling or a thought is pretty humbling.
Sure.
Beginner's mind.
Yeah. Let's talk about the survival mechanism. I was looking at your on your website on beinguniversity.com under tools. There is a document that says it's survival mechanism versus essence. And I was checking things off in both survival and essence. And I started to panic when I got to 7 checks in the survival. Mm-hmm. And then I went right down to essence, and I checked off almost every single one, thank God.
Right.
But the one thing that stood out for me, and I would really like some clarity on this and for you to share this with the audience. The one thing stood out for me under the survival mechanism. So, folks, the survival mechanism has a list of things like control, known pattern, familiarity, the comfort zone, safety, fear, despair, justifications, trying, waiting, and avoiding, and later, and reactive, and numb, and fantasy. and then the essence is in the moment, being present, being grounded in your body, on purpose, straight, coachable, vulnerable, you know, accepting, joy, peace, reinvention, etc. But up in the survival list is something called making stuff happen. And I circled it because the first thing that came up for me was, well, I am a woman who makes things happen.
Sure.
Like, that's part of my personality. That's part of my success in my life. And I thought, oh, my goodness. Maybe that's why I've been more in the being in the last month or so and less of the making stuff happen. I would love to do your definition of what that means.
Okay. So I want to be clear with your listening audience that what I notice about human beings is that each of us has an essential nature to us that has been ours since the moment we were born. But somewhere in the early part of our life, we get this sense that life is dangerous or people are dangerous, and we create this armor or mask or shell around us to protect ourselves. And then we spend the rest of our life trying to figure out, who am I really? Am I this essential nature, these essential qualities, or am I my survival mechanism, my mask, my armor, my shell? And so this document, which, as you said, it's available at beinguniversity.com, also onticoseminars.com under tools, this is meant for people to locate themselves. And what I recommend is to just hang this up on your wall or put it in your car or put it on your mirror in your bathroom. And just like Janet did, just tick off, okay, where am I primarily? Where do I experience myself primarily? More coming from my survival mechanism, which is fear-based, or from my essence, which is love-based. So, Janet, when you look in the fear-based thing, if I make something happen from fear, that's different than creating a result from your essence and from love. Does that make sense?
Sure. It's sort of the fight or flight.
Great. Yeah, fight, freeze, or flight. And I've made some things happen from fear, right? I've pushed some things. I've pulled some things. I've controlled some things. But that's what it means in terms of make something happen, is that you're no longer in the flow of life. You're no longer with what's occurring. You're actually pushing some result or pulling some result out of something. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to me.
And then down in the essence part, the thing that was difficult for me were, do you see the words problem, chaos? Is there one more with a little asterisk?
Yeah, there's chaos, room for mistakes, problems, unpredictable, and vulnerability. Oh, and risk.
Great, great, great. Because when I came up with these two lists, the funny part for me was that you can make a mistake and still stay present. You can take a risk or be vulnerable and still stay present. You can have some chaos happen and still be present. And before I did this work, any of those words would have put me directly into my survival mechanism, would have triggered fear. And so I've spent years practicing so that when chaos shows up now, I actually get excited, like, oh, great, there's some creativity happening, there's some being available, there's some possibility just around the corner. Whereas before, when chaos happened, I got afraid and moved right into my survival mechanism. And nothing wrong with your survival mechanism. It's just that I noticed that I treat my wife the same way that I would treat a saber-toothed tiger. She and I, it's the same reaction, you know? And so it really seems to be like it has two speeds, on and off. Our survival mechanism is either in survival mode, which is protection and comfort and safety and, you know, just taking the easy way out, versus my essence, the core of who I am, because the human being that Hans Philips is, you know, I'm joyful and I'm powerful and I'm related and I'm a communicator and I'm a leader and I'm having fun in life. I am fun. I show up. I hope you want to have a good time, because a good time's going to happen. And if you don't want that, I'm going to probably piss you off.
Yeah.
And for years, Janet, I couldn't figure out why everybody didn't love me. I had this sense of myself and thought, well, if I have this sense of myself, shouldn't that be something that everybody likes? And what's true is not everybody's going to like everybody else. You know, we have this idea that, you know, world peace would be great. You know, it's a challenge to stay in like with people. You know, if I'm really on purpose in my life, I'm going to irritate some people. If you're committed to hiding out or playing small, you don't want to hang out with me, because I'm going to be like fingernails on a chalkboard, because I am playing a big game and I am on purpose in my life. And so if everybody was doing that, great, then we could have world peace. But as long as there are people who are going to hide out or be stingy or be small or get scared, which I know I do on occasion. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
But as long as we have human beings who are going to be human, somebody somewhere is not going to like somebody.
Yeah, I think it's cyclical, because I have experienced that many times in my life, where people don't want to be around me because I'm in my essence, you know, and I'm big and I'm, and I understand that. And then on the flip side, I understand the people, or even me, when I was playing it small and I was hiding out, because I didn't want to see myself.
It's great, Janet.
First of all, I didn't want people to go away, right? So
right.
So you and I have had the experience of people, and I just use going away. So they don't want to be around us when we're in our light, when we're in our essence. So that was the one fear, which I think is a common fear for many people.
Yep. Which sounds silly when you say it. If I'm me, you won't like me, so I won't be me.
Yeah. That's true. And then there's a piece where, well, okay, I'm hiding and all the stuff. Well, if I grow into my potential, if I live in my potential and my essence, people aren't going to want to be around me. You know, it's the same fear.
Well,
and I also think that there's a level of responsibility, accountability, ownership that comes with one living in their potential, living in their essence. And I think that's another, you know, reason why people stay small or hide out, because they don't want that type of responsibility. And what I say to people like that is, well, surround yourself with like-minded people and, work with a coach or go take a seminar or something and gather up some tools and techniques to assist you when there are people who, you know, they don't want to be around you.
Yeah. And Janet, I'm an invitation for one of three things when I'm on purpose in my life, when I'm coming from love, when I'm being present, when I'm in my essence. I'm an invitation for you to be great, or I'm a threat to you because you either see that you can be great and you're not, or you don't see that you can be great and you got to go. But those second two are really uncomfortable. And so I no longer worry about whether people like me or not. If you don't like me, I'm going to stop hanging out with you, because I don't want to make you be great. It's really okay that people are not great. It's a choice to be great, and like you said, pursuing our own excellence, being on purpose, has its own consequences. And people are people are looking for this consequenceless life where, okay, I'll be great as long as I don't have to pay a price or deal with any consequences. Suffering or staying away from yourself has consequences. Owning yourself and being responsible for yourself and being on purpose has consequences. So there's no easy way to play the game. It's just one way is more fun and more powerful.
Yeah. And speaking of fun, so when you talk about people, your commitment to people winning in life, what is your definition of winning fun?
To me, it's really having the person define success for themselves. If we use our culture to define success for us, it gets pretty scary pretty fast, because it's an I, me, my world where, you know, I've got a lot of stuff and then I've got a gate between me and you, so you can't come play with my stuff unless I tell you you can't. I don't actually want to be trapped by my possessions like that. And so for me, true wealth, when I define true wealth for myself, it's beauty, time, travel, sharing love, things like that. Is there money in there? Is there stuff in there? Yeah, sure. I'm a car nut, and given the resources, I will have some fun cars to wash and drive and polish and have fun with. That's just me. That's what I love. But true wealth for someone else might be a garden or might be, you know, collecting rare books around the world, or whatever it is. And so I like to encourage people to discover what is true wealth for them, what is success for them, because I think it's personal for each one of us.
I really think
that defining it is a wonderful experience where you get to clarify, you know what, my father said that success is this. What do I say? You know,
yeah.
How do I define success?
What do I say?
Too easy to just say money is success.
Yeah. It is too easy to say that.
Money only is going to make you more of what you already are. And so many people don't know that, and they get the money and discover that they're no different. And then all the sacrifices they made on the way to the money, it's just the sacrifices keep being made. You just have money to go with the sacrifices now.
Sure. And not much of being more than the sacrifice. If we have any listeners out there that would like to call in and share thoughts or ask questions, 877-876-5227. The local number, 530-876-3222. I'm on live chat as well, if you'd like to come on the live chat. Yeah, so what do I say? Well, I think that goes back to the conception of reality. You know, my reality of success is, you know, XYZ. Your reality is something different.
And the great thing about living in this country is we've got the ability to define ourselves and our success however we want to.
Yes, we do have that, don't we? We have that freedom.
It's interesting right now, there's a climate of fear, and lots of people are agreeing that now is a good time to be fearful, and that'll likely last, you know, perhaps through the year. But I'm really looking forward to people claiming something other than the sky is falling and getting on with building a life they want rather than resisting a life that they don't want.
Yeah, that is a great message. there is definitely a climate of fear, the chaotic energies that are around us. And I was just talking about this with my sister, and we were talking about gas prices. And I don't have to be a victim of what is going on. You know, I just bought a brand new car. Brand new car, very low emissions, excellent on gas. I just filled it up for the second time in a month, you know. So I don't have to be a victim, and I don't have to be a victim of my annual salary not being enough for a brand new car.
Yeah.
And there's so much talk about the fear and the war and the gas prices, and I'm doing my best. In fact, this is actually exactly why I have been more in my beingness, Hans, is this climate of fear and the chaotic energies that are going on. It's high time for people to be quiet and be still and listen, because I think that our answers are within us. And we have the answers, and if we allow that time for the answers to come forth, then there's no reason to be fearful.
And Janet, I want to say two things. One is that the question that you're asking and where you're asking the question from is really what to pay attention to as you're being quiet. Because if you ask a fear-based question, you're likely to get a fear-based answer. And so having people just be clear about, you know, that waiting and breathing and, you know, asking a question, but then asking the question that's behind that question. You know, the question that you truly want to ask might be seven layers deep. The answer that you're looking for might be seven layers deep. And so not just stopping with whatever the first question is and whatever the first answer is. It may be that simple, but very rarely. There's so many layers of sediment on top of who we truly are that very rarely is the first thing that we get the thing.
I'm glad that you shared that. Do you have an example for people who are listening about what exactly is the question I am asking and where am I asking it from?
Well, two things. I was working with a gentleman who's creating a new company, and he's a young man, and he's been a part of creating other companies, and he's made other people very successful and very wealthy. And he's always in the 11th hour. He's always shown the door. And so he now has the opportunity to make himself successful, and we're at the beginning, and he's driving really hard, and his wife is standing by while he does that, working long hours, putting a lot of time in, stressing himself out. And he just took a weekend off, and he drank like he was in college, and he's 33 or 34, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, he's got a hangover, and it didn't much matter in college. You just sit through the classes, and it's no big deal. But as a guy who's trying to create something, you can't create something with a hangover. And his question to me was, why? Why did I do that? Now, if I ask a why question, Janet, am I talking about the past, the present, or the future? Why did I do that? Where does that come from?
Right, the past.
The past. And so there's very little information in my past. And so the why questions have very little power. If you want to ask a question about the future, look at what seems impossible. What seems impossible that if it was possible would shift everything, would fundamentally change your life? That's a question that should take some time to answer, and that will give you an access to a future that you don't currently have. Now, here's the problem is that if you get a what seems impossible, if you get an answer to that, it's still going to seem impossible even though you've gotten it.
Uh-huh.
So the challenge is how to take it from impossible to possible. Because if you've had the thought, it's highly likely that you can go from it being impossible to it being possible.
Very nice.
Janet,
I like us
kind of rounding the corner at the end of the show right here, because I was just marveling at your boldness. You know, how it seems like when you encounter the impossible, you just keep right on going. So I really wanted to say what a pleasure it is to know you, and how fun it is to be around someone who's such a bold human being.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I get the goosebumps. Well, Hans, thank you so much for taking the time and giving your gift to the world here on my radio show. And there was so much value created just for me in this phone call and in the show. And the listeners can find out more about Hans and his work and his services. You can go to Ontico Seminars, so it's ontocoseminars.com. You can also go to Being, B-E-I-N-G, Being University. I love that name. And you can sign up more at accomplishmentcoaching.com. And recommend Hans, and really grateful that you were here today.
Thanks, Janet. Janet, am I allowed to give out my telephone number?
Sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
People have questions. My phone number is 831-471-2210. The only thing I like doing more than coaching is talking about it. So thanks for the opportunity, Janet.
You are so welcome. Take care.
Will do.
Have a great day, everybody. Bye.